This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The war in Afghanistan is winding down. The Obama administration has set a timetable to pull troops out of the country. In the meantime, Americans are still losing their lives in defense of U.S. policy. A new book tells the story of one of those fatal fights on the ground. It's called No Way Out, a story of valor in the mountains of Afghanistan. Co-author Kevin Maurer joins us now by phone from Wilmington. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well. You were a reporter embedded with Special Forces for years. Tell us about the Special Forces, you know, in general, the Special Forces and their particular mission in Afghanistan.
Well, I mean, Special Forces are probably some of the smartest soldiers you have on the battlefield at any time. They are, what makes Special Forces special is their ability to work with indigenous, is what they call them, indigenous forces. In this case, Afghan forces with the Iraqi forces. And what they do really well and what they train hard to do is build rapport with these guys and then train them to be soldiers or, depending on the situation or mission, train them to be guerrillas.
And why did you embed with Special Forces instead of regular troops?
Well, I've done embeds with the 82nd. I've also done embeds with Special Forces and some of the other military special operations units like Civil Affairs. But why Special Forces? Because to me, they really are at the foundation of the current policy and strategy in Afghanistan, which is to rebuild and build up an Afghan security force able to repel the Taliban.
So tell us more about this, the idea of working with Afghan forces to try to train them to take over when the Americans leave. I mean, how is that going?
It's going, I think it's like any kind of training. There's some ups and downs. There's some real success stories, I think, that you can point to, like the Afghan commandos, which are featured in No Way Out. The book really goes into one of their first main missions, the Afghan commandos, who really act as the direct action force. They do a lot of the raids. They do a lot of they go after some of the high-value targets. But if you look at, you know, you now have Afghan army units that are doing, you know, it's uneven at best. But it's hard. I mean, I think what the American people have to realize is that training soldiers is difficult even when you speak the language, and it's even harder when you don't speak the language and don't know their culture as well as you know your own.
Well, tell us about this particular mission.
This mission was one of the first times that the Afghan commandos, which at that time were this brand-new unit that both the Afghan Army and the American Army wanted to showcase as a unit that could go after some of these high-value facilitators and leaders of the insurgency. So in April of 2008, they get tapped to go into this valley way up in the northeastern part of Afghanistan, which is really tough country, to find this guy and either and capture him or kill him. And what happens is the mission doesn't go as well as planned. There was a lot of pushback from the team at the time during mission planning because essentially they had to land in a valley and climb up a hill, which is tactically unsound. It's not a smart plan. They wanted to fly in over top of the village and rope down, but because of some restrictions, they weren't able to do it. So essentially, they go on this mission, and as they're climbing up the hill, they get ambushed because they run into a meeting between this commander and some of the other commanders in the area, and there's a lot of foreign fighters and bodyguards there waiting for them when they get there.
But tell us about this guy and his location, because he's been a high-value target for many, many wars, and no one has dared go after him.
Yeah, it's the Shock Valley is where this guy, Haji Ghaffour, was based. And it's sort of a cul-de-sac in the middle of these really tall mountains. So as soon as the helicopters entered into the valley, you know, everybody knew that they were coming so that everybody could get ready. And Haji Ghaffour is actually, he's been given responsibility for that ambush that's featured in Sebastian Younger's book, War. Where the Taliban almost carry off that soldier. Why is his name escaping me? Guinta, the Medal of Honor winner.
I've lost it too.
He was awarded the Medal of Honor. That battle, Haji Ghaffour was credited as being one of the planners and orchestrators of that. So he became very important and a very important target for American as well as Afghan forces to go and get.
There was ample warning, though, that this particular mission was not a wise mission, particularly as a kind of test case for new trainees.
Well, I mean, it was a difficult mission, one, because the terrain was really difficult to get into and get out of. Two, there were some issues with weather because of the high altitude. There were some fears that they would get weathered in. They couldn't get helicopters in and out of there. And then really at its base, it's never a good idea to fight uphill. And ultimately, I think that was what a lot of the heartache that the team had, which was fighting uphill, even if we think we can get up there fast enough to surprise them. It puts us at a bad spot.
As you said, Special Forces are pretty smart. They're well known for being able to plan their own missions. In fact, that's part of the culture, that for any kind of mission, it starts from the bottom up and ends its way, ends up at the, at the Pentagon or wherever. That was not quite the case with this mission. Is that right?
No, I mean, most of the times, in theory, SF guys do get to plan their own missions. Sometimes they get roped in, and some of it gets planned from the top down. Yeah.
So talk about this mission, where the planning came from, and really, what's the objective?
Well, a lot of times, and I think on this mission in particular, planning is they have to plan it based on certain restrictions. For example, for this mission, because the helicopter pilots weren't comfortable flying to the top of the mountain over the village and placing their helicopters there while they fast roped, which essentially is where they kick a rope out of the door and they slide down it, they weren't comfortable doing that with Afghan soldiers. That hurt their ability to fight from the top down. So because of that restriction, they had to land in the wadi. So then from there, they're planning these missions based on these restrictions that are being placed upon them. For example, I was in Afghanistan in 2010 with an ODA, and we waited just until dawn for the sun to rise so that we could go on this mission to see if we could go into this Taliban area where the team believed there were some fighters sleeping. But we had to wait until dawn because there was a restriction on night missions.
Hmm. And the problem for the pilots on this particular mission with regard to the Afghan trainees is that you put the helicopter at risk. This is a risky thing, and helicopter is kind of a delicate animal when you start kicking doors out, jumping out of it, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, if you think about it like this, too, is if, there's been a lot of talk and problems and questions of tactics when helicopters get shot down. I mean, these helicopters are huge targets, especially the big Chinooks that they were using are massive targets. And yes, they would be in harm's way over on the top, but they were also in harm's way when they flew in because the fighters were looking down. So in some ways, it comes back to being, measuring risk and how much risk you want to take and where do you want to put that risk.
Now, the intelligence was not great for this mission, and the conditions weren't promising going in, right?
No, there were some real concerns, especially from the captain, Kyle Walton, who led the ODA. He had some real concerns with the intelligence.
Like what?
Well, I mean, one of the things that the U.S. Military is very good at is they have these ISR platforms, the intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance platforms, drones, predators, that can fly around and do live feed video of what a target looks like. And the morning before the mission, the morning of the mission, he's in the command center looking at this video feed of the target, and what's being reported from their intelligence source on the target and what he's seeing are not matching up at all. So there was some concern almost immediately that what is the source telling us versus what I can actually see.
And tell us about some of the individuals. You tell this story from the point of view of many of the individuals who were involved in this mission.
Well, I mean, these are some, and that's really what I hope people take away from the book, because what the book is really about are these guys who are in a tough situation, but they never quit. They band together. I mean, John Wayne Walding, who if you made up John Wayne Walding in a novel, you'd get laughed out of the room. I mean, his name is John Wayne Walding. To start, he was born on the 4th of July. He's from Texas. I mean, he's this bigger than life character, and he is wounded. He's gravely wounded about the middle of the fight, and ends up, tying his own leg, which was hanging by a strand, to his thigh, which I can't imagine doing. And I've heard the story a couple of times. You have Master Sergeant Scott Ford, who climbs up the hill when his guys are in trouble and tries to rally him. You've got this guy Seth Howard, who was great. He was one of the weapons sergeants and a great sniper. He was one of the last guys off the ledge, and he was on there providing cover. I can go on and on. There's a combat cameraman there who was one of the first combat cameramen to be awarded the Silver Star for his ability to keep a cool head and help with first aid while guys were getting wounded. Kyle Walton, keeping coordination under heavy fire. I mean, you know, we could do a whole segment on just how the valor that these guys displayed in some of the toughest combat conditions.
And you could describe the scene, but I think we've heard it described before, and we've seen it many, many times. The fire was thick and heavy. There was a lot of screaming, a lot of confusion. It wasn't going well right from the start. The story is mostly about that evacuation. It's about getting out alive, to the extent that most of them did, and pulling the wounded out before things got even worse for them.
Yeah, and then they get trapped on this ledge, and they're almost encircled. They are encircled, and by all sides. So they were taking fire from all sides, and you got to give a lot of credit to the medevac units who you know forced their way in to get the guys out, as well as you know the constant close air support. I mean, it really was a combined effort that was able to save all of them.
And as you point out in the book, climbing down a mountain is as hard as climbing up a mountain, particularly when you know your limbs are pretty well shot up.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have been, by the time they climbed down, they'd been fighting for 7.5, 8 hours and been under fire. So they were spent, and the fact that, you know, a lot of them were wounded, and yet the guys continued to, I know the guys continued to go up and down to help these guys, the wounded get off the ledge. I mean, it's an amazing story to report, and it was a kind of an honor to get the opportunity.
Well, there's an interpreter named C.K. who was shot in the head. Tell us about him and his significance in the story.
I mean, he to me personifies sort of the relationship between special forces and almost American soldiers and the Afghans that they work with. I mean, CK was one of the team, and I've seen this before, not only in this story but in my own experience in being with these units, that the interpreters almost become mirrors of the team that they're with. You'll see Afghan interpreters start dressing like SF guys, they start talking like SF guys, but there's a real kinship between the two. Because these guys are so important, the interpreters are so important for Special Forces because they are truly, in every way possible, the mouthpiece that allows the Special Forces team to not only train these soldiers, these Afghan soldiers, but also talk to them during the battle. So they're an integral part of any operation. And that just leads to this really close relationship. So, you know, CK really was, in all intents and purposes, part of the team. So when you know, I guess I don't want to give away too much about what happens to CK, but he's very important, and I think very important in understanding that tight-knit relationship that you get between the Afghans and the American soldiers.
Well, then there's Scott Ford, who is in a lot of ways the backbone of this group. Tell us about his experience.
Scott Ford is to me, and I know him. I didn't know him well, but I knew guys who knew him, and they all sort of describe Scott as the quintessential old school special forces guy. He got in way before September 11th, so he had been in the teams for a while, and he really is the backbone. He really is the guy that brings them in line and gets them sort of moving forward. And he and Kyle, you know, put together a command team that's able to propel this team to get this mission and to be the ones that mentor the commandos, which at that time was the big mission for SF guys.
And how did they finally escape?
Well, they ultimately are able to get the wounded. They ultimately find an alternate way down the mountain over the side of this ledge. And then when they get to the bottom of a wadi, there's another ODA that was there with them as well. They're able to consolidate there, and then they just basically move back far enough down the wadi, and then that's where you get the valor of the helicopter pilots, which, you know, they were able to come in. The weather at that point was getting tight, and the window to actually get them out of the valley was you know ticking away, and the pilots were able to get in and get them out. But thanks a lot to the pilots and to the close air support they were getting.
It certainly is a story that centers a lot on personal valor, but the only success really in this mission is that they were able to get out alive. So what about this battle in the context of the Afghan war? What does it teach us?
Well, I almost think it's indicative of sort of the coin war, a counterinsurgency battle. It shows that, you know, despite a lot of ordnance and effort and valor and risk, there's no decisive battles in an insurgency. It's really a hard fight to win. It's not World War II. It's not these great set pieces that, you know, once you take a certain capital or something, it's all going to be over. It's a constant slog, and I think it speaks to sort of why 10 years now since the start of the Afghan War, it's still going on, because it's just a hard war to fight, and it's going to be a hard war to win.
What kind of a toll does this take on the special forces themselves when they sort of see this? That, yeah, you can go in, you can have these heroic moments, victories when you can bring a guy out alive who otherwise would have been left to die. But then that when do they look ahead and see the ultimate picture and say, well, we could be playing this game for the next 50 years with the same result. We'd be in the same place. All of this valor hasn't really moved us forward an inch.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that there's frustration with that. But I think that you look at what special force teams are doing now. They're doing this a lot of these village stability operations, and there's sort of been a refocus from this kind of kinetic combat-oriented missions. They're starting to really auger in on building up local government, local infrastructure, and that's sort of that's taken up a lot of their time and resources, and I think that's paying some dividends. I was with the first team that started those village stability missions a couple years ago, and you could see that at that place it was pretty permissible and it worked, but there is frustration to doing this, to be in this constant cycle, and then be deployed as often as they are. But I think that the strategy has changed a little bit since the Shock Valley mission.
Tell us about the changes that you have seen over the time you've covered this war. Any significant changes in the prosecution of this war, say between the Bush and Obama administrations, Obama earlier, Obama later? What changes have you seen?
Well, I mean, when I first started covering it in 2004, there were no resources there. I mean, it was everything was Iraq focused, Iraq centric. So, but SF guys also weren't. They were really doing some interesting, unconventional missions. What I've seen is with a refocus on Afghanistan, you're seeing sort of a more conventional fight being done by both the special operations community and the conventional community, and I think that seems to be one of the other frustrations that I've heard a lot about, is that it's really hard now to do missions. It's really hard to have the liberty to be unconventional and to think outside of what a normal unit would do. There has been a lot more resources. It's a lot more crowded than I used to be, and there's a lot more rules. I know in 2004 we could jump on helicopters and go a lot of places. Now it's a lot more difficult, at least for embedded reporters, but overall, though, I think that there's a real push now to figure with this deadline coming to try to get to achieve some of the goals. I just think at this point there's a lot of hard time, I think, from not only from soldiers but from military planners and politicians to articulate exactly what those goals are.
Well, I was going to ask you, what impact does that have for soldiers on the ground when we're leaving and the date has been set?
Day-to-day, probably not much, because day-to-day they're just thinking about their missions and they're thinking about, because they're there for their guys. And like No Way Out speaks to, they're for the most part, soldiers are there for the guys to their left and their right. They're there to fight for the guys with them. Most soldiers don't get wrapped too much into the big picture strategy. For other guys, I think it's difficult because, I mean, how do you go into an Afghan village and tell an elder, hey, I really want to work long and hard to reach these long-term goals of building this village up so it works and that it's connected to Kabul. And yet, they're not stupid. They know that the news says you're going to be gone in 2014. So it's a constant balance. And I think that's a difficult process and a difficult thing, especially for some of these SF teams that are in these villages that need to convince the Afghans to think long-term and to start, that they could be trusted to get these things done.
What do you think is going to happen in Afghanistan?
I wish I knew. I don't know. I think, to be completely honest with you, it makes my head hurt. I just don't know. I think it's a difficult war. It's a hard war to fight, and I'm not sure. I'm interested, honestly, to see what kind of goals come out after the election. What would be the administration, no matter what administration actually eventually wins this election, has. I think that the first step they need to do is say, all right, from now on, leading until we withdraw from Afghanistan, here's what we're going to try to achieve, and make sure that's very clear and doesn't change, because it's changed almost every year since they started.
Kevin, thanks so much for talking with us.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Kevin Maurer has covered special forces for 8 years, has been embedded with U.S. Special Forces in Afghanistan 6 times in the past 5 years, and is co-author of the book No Way Out, The Story of Valor in the Mountains of Afghanistan. He's going to be appearing along with his co-author, Mitch Weiss, at Union County Library in Monroe, North Carolina, on March 14th at 7 o'clock. Coming up, a new play opens in Durham examining how identity gets tangled up in hair. Stay with us on The State of Things.